Keep Rain Man Digital on the air through 2020 by pledging to our Patreon page. Your continued support allows us to continue to make great content and offer even better features in the future. Help us keep the lights on in the studio by pledging $1 to $10 a month. Go to patreon.com/rainmandigital to pledge.
Blimey. This is one out of a jam jar you got here.
And two, House of Mystery contains demons, angels, elementals, magicians, wizards, apparitions, adult language, and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not enter the House of Mystery.
All right, then. On with the show.
All right, hello, welcome everyone to the House of Mystery, the John Constantine and Friends podcast. I am Michael Flores, your host, and in the House of Mystery with me is David. Hello.
Hello, hello.
All right, so what are you doing today over there? Are you an apparition or are you a zombie?
I'm trying to actually possibly summon angels.
Can you summon Zatanna?
That's what I tried to do, but I mean, like, that didn't work too well.
Yeah, let's summon her and then perform a devil's trap, if you know what I mean. That's so inappropriate, David. Why would you suggest such a thing? You are a sicko.
I am a sicko.
If you guys want his address, I will definitely send it later during the show. Just send me a DM, and you can send your hate mail to David. Maybe you can throw some eggs at his house. Is that still a thing? Do kids still throw eggs? Do people still throw eggs at people's homes?
No, I don't think anybody does that. I don't even think the flaming poop bag actually people do anymore.
Oh, the flaming poop bag. I like that. A good one. Let's do that this weekend to someone. I know someone I don't like, Dave. All right, so today we're here to discuss John Constantine Hellblazer number one by Simon Spurrier, with art by Aaron Campbell, Jordi Belair, and it's here, and boy am I excited.
Wow.
And without being overly excitable, it's really good.
The first issue, yes. Yes. Really good.
I knew we weren't going to be handed shit. I mean, let's be honest. We're talking about Spurrier here. The guy seems to only write gold. But I wasn't, even after the one shot, the Sandman Universe Presents Hellblazer one shot, even after we got that, I was like, this is pretty damn good. Love it. But still, there was some hesitation. And yet, even with my expectations, they delivered a story that I really enjoyed the hell out of.
Oh yeah, in this particular issue, I would have to say that basically Hellblazer is back to form.
I would agree with that. Welcome back, John Constantine. We missed you, buddy.
Yeah, this definitely was a callback to like the old Hellblazer.
The good old days.
But like the style, the way that the story is just in your face. It doesn't give two shits what you think.
Yeah.
And just basically tells you this is what the story is. You may feel uncomfortable. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't care. You're going to be told this story whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Yep. I really dig it.
Yeah, dude, I agree. This is a return to form for the chain-smoking magician. This is why so many Hellblazer fans are giddy with delight. This is the Constantine we all fell in love with, and through a very clever twist of storytelling, Spurrier managed to cut through much of the convoluted continuity that just came with the territory over the last, I don't know, what, 20, 30 some years, by cleverly coming up with a way to bring a version of Constantine from Neil Gaiman's Book of Magic and essentially reboot Hellblazer. I mean, it kind of feels like, and this might be a bad example, but it almost feels like what J.J. Abrams did with Star Trek in 2009. Doesn't it a little bit?
It does.
Just a clever way to bypass some of the noise without actually retconning much or rebooting necessarily. Just say, hey, this is where we're at. Let me cut through all of that and seam this together and we'll explain it later.
Yeah. And it works. Our story.
Yeah.
And like, don't worry about the mythos that all of us know, what we're going to be getting is a full-fledged narrative story.
And they gave you something that people can come in from, you know, and just start reading. You don't need to have read the 300 issues of Hellblazer. This could be something that I don't want to say casual fans, but maybe new fans, the New 52 Constantine fans, the Rebirth Hellblazer fans, the Legends of Tomorrow and Constantine TV show fans, people that are new to the game. They're like, hey, I want to read this and not be completely lost. They won't be completely lost by getting involved with this issue here.
Yeah.
And we covered the whole Books of Magic angle. We covered all of that on a previous We covered all that on a previous podcast episode. We discussed and dissected that whole element and how he used it in great detail in the Sandman Universe Presents Hellblazer number one, The Best Version of You. So you can just scroll through. I believe it was our last show that we put out. And we also have an episode coming out real soon where we actually break down the Books of Magic, Books of Magic, the four-part series that was actually used as a catalyst, or I guess you can say a narrative platform, to get the story moving in this issue here. So to bring us back, today's discussion and review will be focused on the official first issue, Sandman Presents John Constantine Hellblazer number one, A Green and Pleasant Land, part one. So, Dave, my initial thoughts. I'm very happy with our first official issue. Spurrier did a great job moving the reader right into the story. Not a single page was wasted, a complaint I have a lot nowadays when I'm reviewing comic books. I feel like, hey, they promote something as like, say, 30 pages, but you get like 20 pages because you have a bunch of ads. Then they fill up like three pages of nothing.
Yeah, and you just get splash pages and some.
Yeah, whereas with this issue, Spurrier made sure every single aspect of that page and or panel was fully utilized. If not with John talking or our characters talking, then he allowed Campbell to go in there and basically do what an artist should do and tell a story right along with those words. The horror noir vibes were back, and we were introduced to this via the classic procedural narrative template. All is right in the world, David.
Indeed it is.
Never mind the starving children in Africa and the, the blood diamonds and the homeless epidemic of 2019 in California. Hellblazer's back.
And it feels good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the ultimately for me.
Dave, give me your thoughts. I'm very anxious.
My thoughts for this issue initially was I was really excited for it. I already knew Spurrier was going to give us something solid, and he was the right man for the job when it comes to rebooting or restarting Hellblazer.
The dude's awesome, man.
He has his chops. He
might be one of my favorite comic book writers right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think because of this, he's probably going to be one of the hot names.
Well, and Dr. Aphra too, which is one of our favorite things. He's writing that the Sandman universe stuff. I mean, dude, he's the big swinging dick right now.
Yeah, when it comes to the writing staff and like who's hot right now,
yeah,
Spurrier's right up there.
Yeah,
and I was really excited for this because I don't want to sound like I wasn't happy with the past couple of years of John Constantine. We had good moments with him in the New 52. We really did.
It wasn't all bad.
It wasn't all bad.
There's some ups and downs.
But there was just something missing about it, especially with the type of stories that Hellblazer dealt with.
Right.
And I enjoy those stories where it just leaves you uncomfortable and they do things like, hey, you know what? Let's do a story about an overdose junkie.
Yeah.
Let's make it really uncomfortable. And also, I think that initially with this one, I was actually really happy with the return to form when it comes to kind of making magic look ugly.
Yes. Skeevy.
Skeevy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even down to the use of angels and God, all of that is skeevy. It's all horrific. It's all, you know, disfiguring.
Right.
And I always cracked up when I read the current run of, you know, like in the New 52 of John Constantine, mm-hmm. angels are pretty and nice and everything is sweet and wonderful. And it's like, no, in Hellblazer, anything dealing with magic is twisted.
Yeah.
There's a price to pay. And just because something looks great doesn't necessarily mean it's great.
Right. It's not all rainbows and puppy dogs.
And puppy dogs, you know? Yeah. And like, one of my favorite panels was just that horrific scene in the beginning with
the angel skinning a human man.
Yeah, the skinning of the human man by angels, not demons, angels.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, all right, Spurrier gets it. This is what Hellblazer is.
Yeah.
Hellblazer shows the ugliness of magic.
Or at least the distorted, manipulative way it can be used.
Yes.
Which I think is what's happening. At least I think that's what they were alluding to in this issue. Again, we're barely scraping the surface of this story that's unfolding. But all of what you said, I agree with. And I mean, it's very intriguing. It piqued my interest. It definitely made me turn pages very slowly. Typically, you're like moving through pages fast. That's what they usually say when you're really excited about reading something. But no, with something like this, you got to take it all in.
You got to take it
all in. I was going back and rereading pages because there's just so much. There's so much. And that's obviously thanks to Spurrier's know-how of writing comic books. I mean, there's just so much going on in every single panel. And Campbell is just a great... I mean, he's a... whoever put them together, I'm not sure how that all went down. But you got to have... And I always like to compare these types of things to, you know, television writer or film writer and cinematographer. You got to have the right cinematographer in order to translate your words to a screen in order to really reflect what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
And the same thing can be said with relationship between comic book writer and artist.
I'm glad you brought up Campbell because Campbell's work in this one.
This guy, he's a legend, dude. I mean, his work is just fucking great.
It is just fantastic. And, like, his work along with Spurrier's work just mesh so perfectly for the need of this story.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, the first panel you get is, like, this murky red mess, right? We don't know what it is, but then we start realizing what it is. And it fits so perfectly in that grotesque horror vibe as you see the one magician that we're introduced to in this one using the severed hand to stir the pot.
Yeah.
And look into
through the intestines.
Sort through
I believe that's what it was.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
This is what Hellblazer was.
You're a sicko, Dave.
I am a sicko.
No, listen, if it's not grotesque, it doesn't belong.
It doesn't belong in Hellblazer.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. All right, so let's move a little deeper into this more officially. Let's get into this, break it down. The introduction of John Constantine in this issue, classic scene. He's in a bar telling a very off-color joke, which made me laugh, by the way. It must say something about my sense of humor. I'm like, that's fucking good. About the joke about the disabled, like alluding to the fact that the gentleman was interested in seeing disabled porn.
Disabled, you know, porn.
Disabled, yes. People. I mean, that's a good joke. But that leads to Constantine getting kicked from this bar and then takes us to a discussion with the door person, a woman, and is just a clever and quick way to address the elephant in the room. And that elephant in the room is the fact that this is 2019.
Yes.
This is John Constantine, a bit of a fish out of water at this moment. Times have changed. So they find funny ways to address his chain smoking non-PC jokes.
Yes.
I mean, essentially, this is John Constantine in the woke culture.
Yeah.
You're going to have to tackle the obvious.
To steal a phrase from Marvel, John Constantine is essentially the man out of time.
Yeah, and quite literally.
Because like, I love the fact that the way that Spurrier used the dialogue between him and the bouncer.
Yeah.
And the bouncer makes the comment about smoking cigs.
Yeah.
And talking about, you know, like,
wow, that's so retro.
Yeah, it's so retro. And I'm like going, oh my God, that is so awesome. Because the John Constantine that we're dealing with is the guy who was like back in the 1990s.
Yeah.
He doesn't
very
get...
very different times.
Yeah, it's very different times. And then you cut to her basically, I have it right in front of me.
Calm down, Dave. You're getting to that very excited state you get where you almost, you know, start humming in the middle of a broadcast.
But like,
I got a little bucket for you underneath your chair today. Just in case you gotta empty yourself out a little bit, okay?
The one panel that I actually really just made me start laughing was the one right after she tells him about how he is full of hipster, or the bar he's going to is full of hipsters that don't like his off-color comedy.
Right.
Suddenly she just turns around and says, "Oi, Frodo, fuck off back to the Shire until that you get an ID."
Yeah.
And I'm like going, oh my God, that is so freaking funny.
Well, it was a good way to get the two of them to talk, showing that, hey, listen, I mean, she essentially says you got to pick your audience, saying, hey, there's nothing wrong with your comedy, but you just can't walk into any place and start, you know, popping off at the mouth as if these people aren't going to get offended. And I like that because that's actually saying something about a lot of people socially. Specifically on social media, this is something that I say a lot on many of our other shows when we get into these types of things, when we get into social, political things. Like, for example, you know, Roseanne Barr, let's just use her as an example, and her off-color tweets that got her fired off her show.
Yeah.
Well, people are like, well, that's her comedy. That's her comedy. Why are people upset at her? I don't understand. This is what she is. This is who she is. I'm like, yes, but you're expecting people who have no idea who Roseanne Barr is or was, or what type of comic she really is, to just shrug off her comments. Now, if she were saying these types of things in a comedy bar and she was performing to her audience, no harm, no foul. No one's going to complain. No one's going to say anything. But she's tweeting things and expecting that people who don't really know her on the internet, this is a public platform. Everyone, millions of people are on this. You're expecting people to understand your breed of comedy. Not going to work.
It's not going
to
work.
You have to know your audience. Otherwise, you're just cruising for a bruising. You gotta be smart about what you say. So I like what they were trying to do with this. Constantine has, not always, but more often than not, the Hellblazer titles have been used to, you know, explore progressive thought and to say something politically about society. And I like how they worked this out. Like I said, you had to tackle the elephant in the room. And this is the John Constantine equation. Someone who doesn't fit into the PC little box that a lot of people, you know, want to put people today. Put
people in.
And they did all of this without getting on a soapbox, without drawing a line in the sand. You know, Spurrier essentially said, this is Constantine. This is him.
Yes.
Not trying to justify for him, not trying to change him, which is what a lot of comic book writers do with many of our old school characters. Now, there's the obvious. We have just blatantly racist characters that were put together in the 60s. Originally, they weren't considered racist. They were considered progressive. And obviously, you have to change those types of elements, like many of the Black Panther stuff that you had to change in order to fit with the times. When it comes to characters like Constantine, you don't always need to change the characterization of an individual. You just have to say, hey, this is the person, and explain it like they did in this issue.
Oh, yeah.
The dialogue, as I said, between the dialogue exchange between Constantine and the door woman said more than we needed.
Oh, yeah.
It said just enough for us to understand who this person is and that this is our Constantine and we're not going to really change it. You got to know your audience. And if you're reading Hellblazer, guess what? You're the audience.
Yes. And I think the beauty of this dialogue too was Spurrier was able to, within two pages, introduce a brand new character that arguably could be kind of like Constantine's right-hand person.
Well, they definitely set it up the way she
Nat,
the way she asked the what was his name? The guy that wanted to kill Constantine already. He's been back for a day and there was already someone trying to gun. That was somebody gunning for him.
Yeah, it was Barry.
She said, now tell me about this exorcism thing after John had left the scene. Yeah. So obviously they're laying those breadcrumbs that she will be back. And I hope so, because I dig her.
I dig her too.
She definitely fits into the grimy world of Constantine.
And the thing is, at this point, you have to reestablish Constantine's network, because he doesn't have the network that he has back in the old Hellblazer comics.
Right.
Because if you've read the issue that
the one shot
that we were talking about, Constantine is a man out of time. He all of his friends are gone.
Right. And that's something that Spurrier wanted to do with him. He wanted to strip him of all his comforts, you know, and say, hey, guess what? You're on your own. And I don't know how long that's going to last, but needless to say, they did actually address that as well. They used the character Nat to also address that situation as well. You know, Constantine's potential loneliness, the fact that he has been essentially missing for 15 years and he knows no one.
No one.
Everyone he has known or worked with has moved on or potentially died, which makes for a very interesting story, because you're going to see Constantine perhaps even get desperate at times and maybe befriend people that he may not normally for whatever reason, because he needs assistance. Or you're going to see him getting himself into even more dire situations, even more than before, because he has no help or so-called friends. It's definitely an interesting setup.
And
I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. And also, I mean, giving Spurrier the opportunity to introduce a new slew of Hellblazer characters rather than, you know, I think that's one of the flaws of an ongoing series. Don't get me wrong. I love our returning characters, or I should say our reoccurring guest spots. I mean, that's what's fun sometimes about having a long running series. But then also sometimes those characters get a little stale. And if you just kind of cleared the board again, I'm telling you, this is exactly like what J.J. Abrams did with the 2009 Star Trek. Let's clear the board. Let's knock everything off and start right here. And you kind of get that feeling. That's exactly what he's doing. He's clearing the board, and he's going to slowly introduce a new era of Constantine friends slash characters slash help
enemies,
even
down to enemies. I mean, the magician they introduced in this one, Spurrier held nothing back. I mean, he wanted to give us a magician that we all would basically go, man, he's fucked up. What is John going to do against him? And overall with the new characters, I love the new characters that were introduced in this.
Yeah.
I mean, you get Nat, which is a bonus. You get the magician, you get little callbacks to John's past about, you know, like the guy who basically tries to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And because John promised to take off, I think it was like some sexual disease on his face.
Right.
And like, that's the reason why he's after Constantine.
Was it syphilis, or I thought he said like pox or something.
It was something.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
And then you bring in like the other side characters, like the drug dealers who help the magician out.
Right. And that kind of takes us into the immediate story, Dave, which makes up the storyline, A Green and Pleasant Land.
Yes.
And as you keep alluding to, it's appropriately skeevy. I mean, we get the introduction to the players, K-Mag, who's a nasty new character. He's referred to as a Haruspect.
Haruspect.
Is that how you would pronounce it?
Haruspect, yeah.
Yeah. And basically, in ancient Rome, that's a religious official who interpreted omens by inspecting the entrails of sacrificial animals. And that's exactly what he does. a bit of divination, I guess you could say. He could see things. He's cool.
He's cool.
He's twisted and bad, but this dude fits right into the classic Hellblazer archetypes. I mean, and yet another example that Spurrier knows his shit. He knows what he's doing by introducing characters like this, because a character like K-Mag feels seamless when it comes to the Hellblazer world. He belongs. It's not hard to see this character fit right into the world of Hellblazer and John Constantine.
Oh no. His interaction with Constantine's also pretty classic, because like Constantine's not even fazed by him, but K-Mag is a very scary individual.
Yeah. Well, I really like what they did with him, because it wasn't just like, hey, let's see a bunch of brutal things in order to show the reader how bad this dude is. No, they, again, in a clever way, through this character, we get the introduction of the mystery of this episode. The angels, again, we're not quite sure if they're angels, but let's just say they are. That's what they're calling them. Angels are killing his men, K-Mag's men, in a park where they conduct their shady business dealings, i.e. drug dealing, the usual. You get the idea that these angels murder anyone engaging in criminal activity.
And not just murder them, just mutilate them. I mean,
yeah, they're definitely not treating them with love and tender care.
Yeah, I mean, like the first victim was skinned, and then I don't know what the hell the second that whole scene where the angels had little entities just pop out of every orifice.
They said something about legions of somethings. I believe that was the line. Legions of somethings being filled into this dead body. And then out comes a bunch of little creatures that just tore through the guy. I mean, that's wicked.
That's,
I love it.
That's horrific.
Yeah. And they kind of allude to a connection that this old racist hobo might have had to this, I don't know, this angelic occurrence. It's not quite clear yet, but they did allude to it, that he knew something of it. Maybe he was doing it. Maybe he's not as simple as he seems. The angel aspect is fascinating, though. It's not to mention the art, once again, from Aaron Campbell, conveys this like abstract mythological vibe. I guess it's almost like something you would see in a museum.
Oh yeah, it's like when a you Dolly see like almost.
Yeah, it's almost like those interpretations of hieroglyphics or, you know, ancient Babylonian depictions of angels. Just beautiful work.
Just beautiful work.
Yeah,
I mean, like I'm glad you brought the hobo scene, because the hobo scene was actually kind of interesting to me, because it reminded me of classic Hellblazer moments where You're kind of getting alluded that there's a bigger hand at play here, especially the way he talks about God, and God is basically punishing these people for doing the wrong thing, you know?
Right. And that's why I'm wondering if it's not necessarily the angels doing the work. Like, yes, we already know there's so many stories where people can have some type of power to control and make them do their work. So I'm wondering if the hobo is actually calling the shots here. Maybe he has some spell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just atypical type of Hellblazer back in the day type of story.
Yeah, character. I dig
you
it.
You expect that type of character to suddenly turn around and say, oh, he's the magician at play. And that's why I love it when Constantine just comes out and tells him, you don't know anything about this, do you? Because it's like Constantine's like he. The thing I love about Constantine is like he has zero fucks. He doesn't dance around things.
He's all out of them. If you look in his pockets, he doesn't have any fucks in there.
He has zero fucks. He doesn't care who he pisses off. If he wants something, if he wants to know something, he will come out and straight out ask that person.
There's no dancing around it. There's no beating around the bush. It's like, hey, dude, come here. You look like you don't belong here.
You don't belong here.
That's essentially what he says. But this is the core of the issue's narrative. And because after K-Mag finagles Constantine into investigating the death of his men and the murderous angels, the angels murder again, as you mentioned. But this time they put something into the body of their victims, almost like an infestation. And I believe, and you have the comic in front of you, I do not, but I believe they say legions of somethings, and these little creatures tear through the body. And the imagery is disturbing as hell. Now, the interesting part, the reason why I reiterated what happened is because it takes us to our next bit here, Dave.
Yeah.
K-Mag alludes to this being something new, and it's different than the previous murders. The angels usually skinned their victim and then dissolved their bodies or disintegrated their bodies to nothing. Whereas this time, they didn't skin the body, and they put things into the human. And K-Mag assumes that this might be because Constantine is present. So we then think, as the reader, that Constantine did something. Like, he was this unknown variable that caused them to act differently. Which I'm sure we'll find this out. If this is the case, we'll find this out in a later issue. But regardless, it's just an excellent way to create mystery and intrigue for the subsequent issue coming out.
Oh, yeah.
It feels honestly like an episode of television, and that's something that I feel like is a missing art. There was a time, I want to say, of course, it was the Vertigo for the most part, where a lot of the issues that you read, doesn't matter what the title is or was, it feels like you're watching an episode of television. That's how well written it is. That's how immersive the reading feels or makes you feel. That's how immersive the reading is. It really pulls you in. And that's how I felt when I was reading this issue. It felt like I was watching an episode of television.
Oh, yeah, easily. I mean, like, just using the example of the what you brought up, I actually do have the comic in front of me. It's like, The scene where the angels deposit what they say is the angels deposit a legion of something into the flesh of the junkie. They look like fleas, and they basically point out the fact that they look like fleas.
Right.
And
well, it's something biblical. We'll see.
Biblical.
Yeah.
But like that whole page right there, it looks like a shot list. If you look at it. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like an absolute. I forgot the term for it. I want to say a shot list, but I know that's not it. But like
a storyboard?
Storyboard.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, it is a storyboard for a television shot.
Yeah.
You know, you have the scene, you have the angel standing over someone. Then you cut down to the reaction of John and the mute. I forgot the mute's name.
It's right. Doesn't matter, but yeah. But
yeah, the mute character. And then you cut back to the angels, a high overshot. It looks cinematic to
me. Do you
think
they're setting up this mute to be a new sidekick of Constantine?
There's going to be a couple sidekicks because that's what Constantine usually has.
Because
he has his network of helpers.
Yeah, it looks like this guy might end up being like the new sidekick.
Chaz.
It'd be interesting.
He's the new Chaz.
It'd be interesting because I don't know if you noticed this, but he called him he has like a little like notebook that hangs from his neck.
Yeah.
And he had a prick on it when Constantine said something, was making fun of him about being a mute.
Yeah. And then basically he had prick on it. I love that.
Yeah, it's good. I could see them having fun with that. Like I could totally see Constantine having a sidekick that's a mute.
Yeah. And
it would work.
It would work, and it would, I don't want to say like replace, because the character of Chaz was so important to Constantine.
Yeah, but you know, new times, Dave.
New times. But this character could easily become like what Chaz was there for Constantine, which was the sidekick. He was the taxi driver. But in this essence, I think the mute could be his helper that can't say anything.
Who knows? We're still really early on, but we'll see. So all of this, Dave, is the setup for the immediate story arc, but there's also some allusions to the reboot issue, Hellblazer #1, The Best Version of You, which is fair to say is the myth arc, the overarching story. But they address the mystery, behind old soulless Constantine making a deal with our dying Constantine and sending him, as he said, where he's needed.
Yes.
In order to save his life, which we know is all types of bullshit. But the fact that they did touch on that at the end of the issue, we know that whatever's going on, shit's a brewing. I mean, we see, I believe it was soulless old man Constantine talking to the prime minister in a rather compromising scenario. The prime minister's naked and engaged in some kind of sexual deviance
yeah.
in the company of other masked individuals. I don't believe we're supposed to fully grasp what we're seeing as of yet, but I'm willing to bet this is the bigger story, or at least connected to. If Soulless Constantine is connected to this prime minister and the deviance that's going on, then yes, I think it's safe to say that is the bigger story, right?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it goes in line with what you were saying, how everything felt like a TV show. This final part kind of was like alluding to the bigger story.
Yeah,
the bigger story, what you would get in a television episode.
And especially a procedural type of show where they hit on the main myth arc right before you go to credits.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was very cinematic. And it looks like, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, they might be going down the social commentary route again, which is just fine with me as long as it's executed in an intelligent fashion.
And I honestly feel that if Spurrier's doing it, he can do it intelligently.
Yeah, as long as it's an intelligent foray into socio issues and it's not soapboxing, I can dig it. And Spurrier's not one to grab for low hanging fruit, so I'm not worried. But Hellblazer has been used to transport political commentary many, many, many times. So
oh, yeah.
I'm not quite sure what they're saying yet with the prime minister and the sexual deviance and soulless old man Constantine. Can we call him that? Soulless old man Constantine? I'm coining that.
I think you could. You could probably. That'd be the easiest way to designate him.
Yeah. Soulless old man Constantine.
The interesting thing to me was like, so does this mean that old man Constantine's the villain of the story?
It'd be interesting. Imagine Constantine, which we already know, he's his own worst enemy. So if they actually were to take that figurative or metaphorical thought, or I should say poetic thought, and literally turn it into something, I mean, it would make sense on so many levels if Constantine's own worst enemy is himself. I mean, this isn't the first time Constantine has been, I believe, didn't he have like a, it's been years since I've read all these stories. Wasn't there like a bad version of Constantine for a while running around?
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been so long since I've read the entire,
it's been around for 30 years. I mean,
and there's so much. It's kind of like you'd expect something like that out of Constantine. Just to have an evil version of himself. But the funnier part is the evil version of himself is actually cleaner than the normal version of himself.
Yeah.
And the one thing I want to ask you about this, especially since like it's a return to form for Hellblazer, right? Are you happy with them going this whole really dark and grotesque route for Hellblazer? As a person that just came from, you know, watching Constantine from the New 52, and suddenly we have K-Mac have a wall full of dead animals with their guts hanging out.
Yeah, I mean that's the book, man. That's Constantine. Yeah,
and I'm like going. The only thing I'm like going is, man, I wish I could actually get younger viewers into, like.
What do you mean, younger viewers? Like you mean under 18?
Yeah, you know, like I really want to give this to all people.
Are you like that guy at Circle K that sells, you know, vape pens to underage kids?
Yeah. I can't say no.
I mean, you are, after all, the guy that was selling porn to high school kids.
Well.
Now, mind you, I don't want people, again, sending you hate mail. You were also in high school. You were the same age.
Exactly. I was the same age.
And you were just,
I want to influence everybody.
You were just on the grind. You know, you were just pimping things out.
I was just pimping things out.
So you have an excuse then. But come on, Dave. You don't. Like, you probably would let kids buy this, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would.
Jesus. You're the guy that I used to go to in the comic book shops when I was a kid. Like, okay.
I was the popular guy.
So-and-so is working today. That means I can buy my Vampirella. I think. And I was 12, too, by the way. This guy always let me get it with a big old smirk on his face. He's like, you want to see those titties, don't you? I'm like, yes, sir.
Yes, sir, please.
Yes, sir, please. Vampirella for days, please, sir. Yeah. I know, I get what you're saying, Dave, but they'll have their time. And listen, kids will do what they do. And if they find a copy of this or they buy it on Comixology with their parents' account, so be it. But I mean, listen, they had their fun. They had the DC Rebirth and the New 52. Let us have our time. Let us have our time. This is Daddy's time,
this
okay?
Is Daddy's time.
Go to bed.
Go to bed.
Go to sleep, son.
And for God's sakes, knock on the door.
Knock next time. Knock next time. Never come in when I'm reading Constantine. Especially if Zatanna is guest starring, please. Yeah, so, all right, so let's talk variant covers, Dave. Now, cover A was sold out everywhere.
Yes. It's hard to get. It's difficult to even get this issue.
Aren't the variants usually the ones that are sold out first?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering why. Okay, so I went, like, first off, I'm a loser because I was tweeting on our account. Go purchase, pre-order, talk to your comic book shops to make sure you get your copy. And then I'm the idiot that didn't do it. Because I just figured, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to the gym. And then after I go to the gym, I'm going to head out to the comic book store and pick me up a copy or two. And when I got there, the guy looked at me and he said, he saw me just looking over and over. I was going back and forth in the shelf. He's like, hey, man, what are you looking for? I'm like, looking for Hellblazer, bro. He's like, oh, dude. That was gone the moment I opened my doors. I'm like, really?
Yep.
And he just was laughing. Oh, yeah, man. I don't think any of us expected this. I mean, he said, I ordered a stack this high. That was about a foot high, he said. And I did not. I knew we would sell a lot of them. That's why I ordered that many. He's all, but I didn't expect them to be gone. And he said, also, he's all, the special Books of Magic number 14.
Yes, that is sold out.
That was sold out, too. So then I went to another comic shop. Didn't find any copies. None. Finally, at the third one, I found one variant cover, which was amazingly beautiful. No, I take that back. I found two variant covers. I found the blank cover and the I believe, cover B is what they're calling it. But no cover A, which I'm eventually going to find a way to get it because I need to have it at least for this first issue. And I've already told myself that at least for the first six or seven issues, I'm going to buy multiple copies. I'm going to buy the main issue, cover A, and then I'm going to buy the whatever variants accompany that issue. And I'm only going to do it for six or seven issues because then I'll just start buying the regular ones.
Oh,
only.
Yeah.
But Dave, do you know the mystery of the blank variant covers? Like, apparently, it's a thing. I've never really purchased one. I've seen them before. But I saw Aaron Campbell. He tweeted out three copies of the Hellblazer issue when he received them. And I want to say that was about a week and a half before they were released. And I saw that there was a blank cover. I'm like, well, that's cool. And there really isn't anything special about the blank cover other than the fact that it's a blank cover. It's a bit of a novelty thing.
Yeah.
And it's relatively new. And when I say new, what I think it became a thing recently within, the last 15 years or so? Does that sound
even
right?
Shorter. I mean, I think in the last 10 years. Because the blank covers, or what people call sketch covers.
Okay, is that what they call them?
Yeah. The whole point of those is you can take that to an artist. And the artist can sketch you out your own cover for that issue.
Interesting. And now that makes it even cooler.
There have been so many. I have a couple that have been made for other series and stuff that it's so popular just to get another artist's rendition of, hey, here, take this issue, give me your own take on, like, Constantine. And they will sketch it out for you.
Okay, so
some artists will actually give you full-blown cover art.
Okay, so say Aaron Campbell is doing signing and hanging out at a convention.
Yeah.
And he, you know, they do commissions for people while they're there.
Yep. You take that cover.
He'll do something.
And he'll do something. Because that's what a lot of artists do now.
David, if I give you my blank cover, will you go do that for me? Because I'm a little too bashful. Yeah. I'm a little too bashful.
You're a little too bashful. You're like, can you just draw me this?
I just feel like Jim Carrey in Ace Ventura. Remember when he goes up to Dan Marino? Like,
Sign, please.
I don't shame anyone for doing it because I want to do it, but there's something in me. I just can't do it. I can't go up to a guy like, hey, buddy, can you autograph this for me, please, and sign it?
Well, it's so funny because it's easier now because you could go around like Comic-Cons, like any comic conventions, artist alley, or even like little shows, or artists nowadays will say, hey, I'm going to be at this comic shop. Come and visit me.
Mm-hmm.
You can literally just basically, they'll take like waiting lists for like covers and then they'll do the cover art and they'll send it to you. I know that brother's done that. I believe a couple times, and he's gotten a Star Wars done for me a long time ago like that. And a couple artists that I know have done the same thing where I give them a sketch cover and all of a sudden suddenly they come back and say, here's your fully colored cover for this issue.
Okay.
And it's freaking cool. But it is like something that just relatively happened within the last 10 years.
Can you do it for me, please, David?
I don't want to talk to them.
I'm scared.
So
stupid. So you have the issue in front of you.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep touching mine, so just you touch yours for me. Who did the work on the cover A? It should cover say it.
Yeah.
I want to definitely get their name out there. And then also let me know the name of the individual that did the variant as well.
Let's see.
Back. Yeah, they do their credits on the back. Now the cover, okay. The cover for cover, I believe the artist for cover A was John Paul Leone, right? Yes.
For cover A is John Paul Leone. The variant cover was done by Charlie Allard. Adlard?
How do you spell that? Because I totally dig. I think I might like the variant cover better.
Yeah, I really like Adlard's.
Spell that name out for me. Charlie what?
Charlie Adlard. Adlard is A-D-L-A-R-D.
A-R-D?
Yeah, A-R-D.
Let's see what he's worked on. Looks like he's worked on some Walking Dead.
That's where I recognize his art, especially like in this particular one, because it has very similar...
Some Green Lantern, allegedly. Also some Hellblazer, it looks like. Interesting. So the guy's done a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I dig it. I'm glad if I can only get one, I am happy with getting cover B, the variant.
The variant.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain. Although I'm going to, if I can't find a copy out there, I'm going to steal one from someone. You know anyone that has one that I can break into their home? Preferably they don't have a security system.
That doesn't have a security system.
But hey, if they have a security system, I will do an Ethan Hunt and propel myself in there through the roof.
And the beautiful thing about like, especially like the sketch cover art, you can tell them to do whatever you want.
Dave, I think I'm going to do that. We're going to have to check Aaron Campbell's schedule and see where he's at. See what he's doing.
You could. I mean, a lot of artists actually have that on their website. It's kind of like, oh, you could contact me about this. Some of them follow. If you follow them on Instagram and all the social media ones and you contact them through that, they can do commissions through that.
All right, well, Dave, let's get into our final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
You want to start
on Hellblazer? Number one, I'm really happy how this turned out. I was really scared. I was really scared and hesitant because I'm going, okay, we're just like John. I feel like I'm stuck in the 1990s when it comes to Hellblazer, because you know. I understand that Constantine had to be brought into the DC universe and he had to be lighted up a little bit. He had to be cleaned up and kind of superheroized to fit into the DC universe. But I missed Hellblazer. And I
David,
wanted
he
those...
was always the DC universe, David.
Yes, I know. But like, I'm really happy with the tone of this comic book, especially the tone, because this is a callback to the classic Hellblazer story narration. Like, they don't hold back anything.
No.
They basically that's one of the really the charms of the old Vertigo stuff was like, it didn't hold your hand. It didn't tell you it's going to be all right. No,
they don't do what I want you to do at the next comic book convention with Aaron Campbell. I want you to hold my hand and help me.
Yeah. Don't hold. We're not going to hold your hand. We're going to
be bashful.
We're going to give you a story. You're going to like the story and your eyes are going to be opened to the story. And wow. I have to say, this has become, just out of the single issue, a must buy for me. Like, this is going to be a must buy series.
Oh, absolutely.
I was really worried about it because I was like going, man, I like John Constantine as the character, but Hellblazer stories, you don't see that very much nowadays. You'll see it in, like, say, outside of DC, outside of like the DC publishing, like, say, for example, like Image. This type of storytelling you would see in Image. But I'm really, really digging the Sandman universe and the Black Label.
Yeah.
Because I think it opens doors for a lot of artists and a lot of writers who want to show their skill.
So, David, based on our RMD score.
Oh, man. Really tough for me not to, but I'm going to be good.
From 1% to 100%.
I'm going
What's your percentage? Now, just as a reminder, for there might be some new listeners out there, our RMD score system breakdown, I should say, goes as follows. 1 through 40% equals get fisted, thumbs down.
Which this is not.
What is this garbage? 41 to 70% is it's a movie or it's a comic or it's, hey, it's pretty good. It's shrug worthy. It's not bad. It's not super groundbreaking. Thumbs sideways. 71 to 90% is hell yeah, thumbs up. 91 to 100% equals kick ass, devil horns. Near universal acclaim. All right. So, that being said, Dave, give us your percentage.
I am going to give this a 91%.
91.
Because it is right there at kick-ass level. Just right there. It's not 100% worthy. You
know Aaron Campbell, if he's listening right now, Spur, you're like, what an asshole.
What an asshole.
But it's not 100% worthy. Fuck this guy.
It's not, you know, like jizz level, you know, earth-shattering orgasm level.
Wow.
But.
Well, I have a bucket underneath your seat. So.
Yes, you have that bucket. Yeah. And luckily, I was just brought to the edge. Just brought to the edge of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I would give this 91%. It's a definite must read. It's a great start.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you want to know more what's going on.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you introduce a brand new cast of characters for John to play in the sandbox with.
Yeah.
And honestly, the two new characters that I really dig is Nat and the Mute.
If they're going to be new characters, if we shall see.
That's partially why I bring the score down, because I'm like going, I don't know if they're going to continue continue with these characters. They may be one-offs, which would kind of be disappointing to me,
right,
if you don't bring these characters back.
Okay. All right, Dave. Fair. Okay, so I will follow you up here with my final thoughts. Spurrier is the man to do this job. You know, when I started reading Sandman Universe and when they had started that whole thing, you know, Neil Gaiman's curated titles of sorts, I wasn't quite sure what they were going to do with it. Ended up being a pretty cool, unique little world reminiscent of the Vertigo days, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, it only makes sense that they bring Hellblazer back into this world as well. And the fact that it's part of this whole evolving Sandman universe, there's just so much potential. And this first issue barely taps into that. And that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
You don't want to be just thrown in and just all these things thrown at us. I feel like the first issue works really, really well with getting things started. They introduce the baddies. They introduce the scenarios. They introduce the dilemma. And they allude to the bigger story. I mean, what more can you want? The introduction of new characters, the characterization of John Constantine is intact, which is I watch that like a hawk whenever anyone writes Constantine. Like, did you write him the correct way? Or just how you think a British man talks? So everything was spot on. I'm going to give this a 95%. And I'm going to tell you the only reason why it doesn't get 100. The only reason is because if you didn't pick up Sandman Universe Presents Hellblazer number one, the one shot, if you didn't, you wouldn't really understand what was going on and why Constantine is back where he is.
Yes.
And maybe eventually they'll explain that in later issues. But if you're just coming in and you miss that one shot, let's say in 4 years, and you just, and you're like, I'm going to start reading Hellblazer, you would be a little bit lost. That's the only negative, and I don't even think it's a negative.
I don't either, because like the thing that you would be questioning is if you were a hardcore fan of Hellblazer.
Well, I just don't understand why they didn't make the one shot number one and make this number two.
I don't either. I honestly don't. I think that this,
don't you think that would have been
issue number two?
Don't you think that would have been a better, I don't know, maybe in the collected volume when that comes out, they'll put that one shot in the collected volume, which I'm willing to bet they're going to do that, because I believe they did that with The Dreaming. In fact, I know they did that with The Dreaming. They did. They put the one shot in there as well. So, yeah, 95%. I can't complain. Just an amazing accomplishment. Beautiful work. When people say comic books are low art, fuck them.
You want to smack them with this?
I want to give them something like this, because this is, I don't consider this low art. When you see the work of Campbell, that's amazing. It's sheer artistry. Truly is. And I'm not blowing this because I love Constantine. The art is amazing. So my hat's off, and I'm looking forward to the next issue, which, by the way, comes out, goes on sale December 18th. So mark your calendars and pre-order for real. Contact your comic book shops. Get yourself a box like I did after being a sucker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I was extremely surprised with how fast the Sandman Universe issues have been flying off the shelf, and it's gaining momentum.
Yeah, don't do digital, guys, with this. Come on. You got to get that physical copy. The work is just too amazing to have some cheap digital knockoff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, this is honestly a collector thing.
And if you pirate it, I'm just going to take this pencil I have and
jam it into your
eye. I'm going to take you to the park where the angels kill people and let the angels just do their thing. I'm like, go ahead. He pirates shit. He doesn't buy anything. Oh, it's too expensive. Well, guess what? When you can't afford something, you don't get it.
You get little people coming out of your anus.
Yeah. Yes, please. All right. I want to thank everyone for listening to today's discussion. You can always find all of our shows, past and present, on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Just search House of Mystery. Also, keep Rayman Digital on the air through 2020 by pledging to our Patreon page. Your continued support allows us to continue to make great content and offer even better features in the future. Help us keep the lights on in the studio by pledging $1 to $10 a month. Go to patreon.com/rainmandigital to pledge. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Later.
My name is John Constantine. I'm the one who steps from the shadows, all trench coat and arrogance. I'll drive your demons away, kick them in the bollocks and spit on them when they're down, leaving only a nod and a wink and a wisecrack. I walk my path alone, because let's be honest, who'd be crazy enough to walk it with me?